Support for The Morning Show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from the first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program online at carthage.edu/aspire. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to The Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am delighted to be speaking with three faculty colleagues from the Fine Arts Division at Carthage, three members of the art faculty at Carthage. A little later in the hour, Jojen Van Winkle, but in this first portion of The Morning Show, we will be speaking, first of all, with Kimberly Green, who is chair of the art department, associate professor of art. She teaches 3D design and ceramics. And this is her first visit to The Morning Show. And also with us, Ryan Miller, who I have spoken with at least once, maybe twice before on The Morning Show. He is assistant professor of art, and he is director of the H.F. Johnson Art Gallery, which is actually a very quiet place right now, as are most art galleries across the country, and indeed really around the world. And so we'll be talking with both of Professor Green and Professor Miller about what it is like to teach art in this format of the virtual, online and entirely. And are there ways in which, of course, this is quite difficult, but are there other ways in which there are maybe unanticipated silver linings, certain ways in which this is actually an exciting and beneficial venture for everybody? So I'm excited that we can have today's conversations. And for part one, Kimberly Green and Ryan Miller, we welcome both of you to The Morning Show.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Greg.
Good to have you here. Professor Green, before we get into the whole matter of online and what you and your colleagues are doing right now, I have to ask you about something so intriguing in your biographical sketch on the website. This is something I did not know about you, and that is the fact that you are a relative newcomer to the world of art, at least as your professional career is concerned, that for some years you were actually an electrical engineer. So I wonder if you could just sort of explain to our listeners this sort of dual path of your professional life. I mean, all along have you been kind of interested in both art and the sciences? And how did this professional life of yours take shape?
Thanks for asking, Greg. I think that, I think I'm a bit of a split personality. And I think a lot of this was really showing from the very beginning. I've always done art. And I've always just, I loved math growing up. And so by the time I was in high school, I was taking, I also loved the sciences. So I was taking math and physics and computer programming, but I was also taking, you know, 2 hours of independent study art because I had already taken all of the art classes that my high school had. So I think when I was looking at colleges, and I don't know, you know, that was in the 80s. I just don't think that, you know, my parents were really encouraging me and my teachers to go into engineering. I think if you can do the sciences, people don't always encourage you to go into art. So anyway, I went to Northwestern. I love studying there. I actually, the challenge of engineering, I just absolutely loved. And then I ended up doing a co-op program there and then was hired at IBM. Right after college. So I worked in DC. I did like space technology work, designed computer chips. And then I just, one thing about myself is that I'm not very good at sitting in a chair and staring at a computer screen. And so engineering, I worked a lot of hours and I spent a lot of time. So anyway, I ended up leaving that job and then just trying to find myself. I moved into with some peace activists and then I moved to Seattle. And I wrote computer software, just freelance. And while I was out in Seattle, I just really got interested in art again. And one of my art teachers out there convinced me to go back to art school. And then I went to grad school. did a year at Michigan State before I came here, and the rest is history.
Wow. One follow-up question. We often think about these worlds that you've described as really distinct from each other. I think the general public views them as having very, very little to do with each other. I mean, almost like separate planets. And you kind of described yourself as, I think, maybe a split personality or something. And that, all that being said, do you feel like some of your artistic instincts and your sort of creative juices as an artist, did those play any kind of significant and helpful role in this work that you did for so many years that at least at a glance would seem not to have anything at all to do with the arts or with creativity?
Well, I think the thing that they have a couple of things in common. And when I worked at IBM and also doing freelance software, I had the real luck of actually being a designer. I was a logic designer. And so I think that there's that element that is truly the same, is that it's all about design, or it can be a lot about design. And also it's a lot about problem solving. And also I think one thing that engineering and one thing that art have in common is they're not, like, you have to get things to work in the physical world. And, you know, you're working with materials. And so, like, it's not the same as having things work in theory, like gravity matters, weight matters, mass matters, material qualities matter. So there's definitely some overlap.
Hmm. Well, I love learning that about you, and appreciate you sharing that with us. Professor Miller, before we dig into some of the courses that are going on, I mentioned in my introduction of you that you are the director of the H.F. Johnson Art Gallery at Carthage, and as I alluded to, it's a very, very quiet place right now, as our art galleries and museums all across the country. Can you just speak to what it feels like to have this important facet of your professional life, in a sense, sort of frozen in place at the moment?
Yeah, I would say the most immediately frustrating part of it is the inability to feature our own students, the seniors that are graduating this year, their annual thesis show. So, you know, each year as our seniors graduate, they get to have a group show that is really kind of a collection of solo shows in the H.F. Johnson Gallery. It feels like a big momentous moment. Kim could probably speak to that as well. Having your kind of first big solo show, like it makes you really feel like an artist in some ways, maybe for the first time. So it's mostly, most immediately disappointing that we don't get to offer that to our students. The good news is we already have plans in place to bring them back as very recent grads for a show next year to try to alleviate that absence that happened in our scheduling. But yeah, the gallery is dark right now. It's frustrating, but it's maybe a little bit better knowing that everybody's trying to figure this problem out right now. Some museums are doing a great job of finding online various platforms to kind of instigate and interrogate what it means to be an artist in this digital age, when distance is important and when the screen is the only way that we can see. There's a kind of a seminal piece of writing called Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction by Walter Benjamin that really talked about kind of how images are spread, and this has been a thing that we've been dealing with for, you know, over 100 years with the advent of photography, and even before that with printmaking. So, you know, we're always trying to figure this out. The one thing that's always going to be lacking on a screen is going to be aura. We're going to be lacking this ability to kind of understand the tactility, the physicality, the presence of a piece. It is, you know, it's the reason why you go to a space as opposed to just looking at it online. It's because you want to stand in front of it. You want it to confront you. It's a relationship. There's cross communication happening there. It's not just about you taking things into it. Like, you're speaking back to the work. And so that is what's absent here. That is what we have to figure out, how to span that gap right now. And there are innovations happening, but there's also going to be a lot of similar things, and we have to figure out how to deal with kind of just the avalanche or wave of imagery, of images, of documentation of artwork that's going to be showing up online, because that's the only place for it to show up now.
Right. And I'm glad you described that so vividly, because I don't think a lot of us stop to think about the fact that there is something very different about, for instance, seeing a painting in a room on a wall with the light catching it, even in the morning versus the afternoon versus the evening, and where I am standing and who I am with. I mean, there are all kinds of factors like that that contribute to what one experiences when you view a piece of art that way versus clicking your keyboard and seeing the image come up on the screen. For as exciting as it might be to have that kind of direct and quick access to images of great artwork that maybe you wouldn't be able to stand in front of and see, it does not replace the first experience of experiencing something in person.
Yeah, absolutely not a replacement. There are, you know, pros and cons. You know, like I'm very happy that the internet exists and gives us the privileged access to see things that we would otherwise never see. You know, like that it precludes, should there not be the internet, we would not be able to, you know, travel across seas or just kind of show up in a gallery on the other side of the world to understand what's happening in those art markets. And we do live in a global art market now, and we don't have to go into the marketness of it, even as we're talking about a gallery. But you know, there are spheres of influence that artists are having back and forth, and there's something grand about that conversation that gets to be had because of the internet. There's something grand about students getting to see things that they otherwise wouldn't be able to see should the advent of the internet haven't come about. So we have to be grateful for those things, but we do have to continue to acknowledge that, you know, people are making physical things and we're getting to see them secondhand through these screens. And so, you know, they are meant to be experienced firsthand. And there will be a coming back to that. We'll figure it out. We'll make our way back to that place. But I also think that the gallery experience is going to be very different when we do come back. And I hope what it actually results in is maybe a more contemplative, slower pace of looking. Maybe we're going to get a little screen fatigue here. Fingers crossed that we do, and we decide it becomes important to just go be in a space for a length of time and let that space affect us, and not feel like we're just clicking a box that says, yes, I saw that, I was there. Hmm.
For those of you just joining us on this morning show today, I'm speaking with actually a total of three members of the art faculty at Carthage College. Later in the hour, Jojen Van Winkle. Right now I'm speaking with Kimberly Green and Ryan Miller. And we're going to spend the next few minutes talking about the courses that they are currently teaching as this spring semester comes to a close. And they, of course, like their counterparts across the country, are doing all of their teaching in a virtual format online. And I thought it would be interesting to explore the ways in which that is a very tricky thing to do, but by no means an impossible thing to do in the format of virtual online teaching and learning. Kimberly Green, I'm especially intrigued at the notion of something like ceramics being taught in a virtual environment, since that is about as tactile as art study gets, I should think. I mean, you really literally get your hands dirty, and it has to feel incredibly different to be doing that now. Maybe even ahead of us talking specifically about your ceramics class and some of the other courses, maybe you could just talk about what you and your colleagues talked about at the early on in this crisis, when it became clear that Carthage was going to have to pull away from in-person, on-site teaching. What kinds of conversations did you and the other art faculty have about how to go about doing this?
Well, I think some of the biggest challenges were just obviously to make art, you need a place to make art, a studio, you need tools, you need materials. So it was really just like, how do we get students to set up studios at home, and how do we get those materials and tools to them? And so like in, we did a lot of different things. Of course, when we first went online, there was not like a lockdown yet. So students, a lot of students were actually able to come to Carthage, pick up a packet of tools, pick up a packet of materials, and then go home and set up their studios. But in other cases, you know, one of the things we really talked about was like, okay, when that can't happen, how do we get these things to students? So then we put together packets, mailed things to students. In other cases, depending on what it was, students ordered things online so that we could be ready to work online. And then I think, in fact, a lot of our classes in the art department are really different. So then I think it was a little bit more individual. Like I know for ceramics, the first thing that I did was I thought, well, they're going to be working at home. I don't normally work at home. So I actually set up a studio in my dining room, which I never do ceramics in my dining room. So I wanted to see what that was going to be like for them. And I, you know, I figured out what I would need to set up this studio in my dining room. I made videos. I sent the video to them and they watched it. And I actually managed to get more than 30 students working at home making ceramics. And so it's really been amazing. And I guess it turned out, I think you were talking about how tactile clay is, even though all of the instruction, like we have group meetings, individual meetings to talk about their projects. And then I did, you know, I'm on like video number 50, I think, for video demonstrations I've been doing. So all of that's online. But the actual work, I think, working in clay turns out to be a perfect antidote to the screen. So if you're tired on, you know, once they finish watching the videos or talking about their projects with me or their classmates, they get to work with their hands and work in clay. And I have to say that it's been, I'm so happy. It's been shocking at how exciting the work has been.
Wow. By the way, can you at least briefly summarize what it takes to set up a ceramic studio in one's kitchen? I mean, what does one need in order to do that? What are the basic components of something like that? And how much is that within, you know, most of your students grasp to be able to put that together?
Well, to be honest, it's just a small table, a piece of canvas, a bag of clay, a bucket, a yogurt container, a fork, a knife, and a plastic rib. And if they didn't have a rib, they could cut up a credit card. So like a piece of plastic and then plastic. And then if they were able to pick up their other ceramics tools, then they have extra tools for carving and detailing. But there's all kinds of things. Again, you can cut up, you can go, you know, they have their whole kitchen and garage now. So you can go in and just like find screws and nails, like all kinds of other things besides ceramics tools to make marks with or to cut with or carve with. So in part, I feel like, and then of course, a lot of it is hand done. So obviously they've got their hands. So
in the early going, did you sense a lot of misgivings from your students in terms of how can we possibly do this? What is even the point of trying to do this in this way? Or by and large, were your students in a sense on board right from the beginning? I mean, confident that such a thing was going to be possible?
I mean, I think. Oh, go ahead, Kim.
Oh, I was just going to say, I feel like, I think everybody, you know, I actually have a lot of seniors right now. And so I think there was a lot of determination that they were going to graduate and that they were going to graduate strong. And so I tried to hit the ground running, and I feel like they really responded. And we just, there was no delay. We just started working immediately. And I think at first, you know, the Zoom meetings or Google Hangout meetings were awkward. And I was pretty stubborn about just consistently doing those. And now they're just like a pleasure, really. So That's what I would say. I just hit the ground running, and they responded to that.
Very good. Ryan Miller, what did you want to add?
Well, yeah, I agree with what Kim's saying. I found the tactile, the physical to be recuperative and the break that students immediately already wanted. I mean, I think that's why students have always come to these analog forms of making. Kim and I jokingly refer to our media as being ancient practices. She has students play with mud. I have them, you know, use sticks to make marks on surfaces. Drawing and ceramics are really old practices. And I think there's a reason why they've stuck around for so long. There's a reason why they've had such a long lifespan in our culture. And that's because they satisfy something very primal and basic that we want to do. We want to use our hands. We like putting them to use. And there's a real limited amount of things you can do with a screen, with your hands. And so, you know, Kim's idea of setting up a studio in her home is the exact same thing that I did. I have my own art studio here. I live in Chicago. But what I did was I brought all of the materials that I assigned to my students at the beginning of the semester to my house. I'm kind of thinking about that film Apollo 13, which of course based on real life, you know, like when things were going wrong in space, the folks on the ground had to pull what they knew that the people in space had and like figure out how to solve problems using these very basic things. So when Kim talks about using a credit card, you know, like I'm thinking about like, oh, these are tools that I normally have, but I know my students don't have. And I need to come up with the solution for how they could work around that and maybe also use the tools that they are now needing to access as part of the class. So how do I actually invite the screen now more into the practice of drawing? And so, for some of those assignments I have, I guess I would say for all of them, obviously, just on a very basic level, but making videos for instructional use, but also, you know, having them use the internet to find resources that we wouldn't necessarily use in class the exact same way. So there is a lot of innovation that I know myself and all of my colleagues have been implementing with this. And I also know that this is where we have a chance to thrive. We're creative problem solvers. That's what is at the core of art making. You're a creative problem solver. Kim talked about that earlier with her previous career. And so I think we are, you know, we use our ingenuity here in a circumstance like this. How do we make this still happen? And I have found in large that students are excited, on board, eager to do something, make something that feels tangible that they can like decorate their space with. Not in the sense that it's decorative, but that it has a presence and an aura, like I mentioned before.
Hmm. I'm especially interested about the drawing class that you are teaching right now. I think it's drawing one, right?
Yeah.
So I know that when I see students drawing on campus, that it appears that sometimes in the course of a class period, you are sending them out. And so we'll see them at various places in the Johnson Arts Center drawing. And I suppose it's because of some assignment like perspective or whatever it might be. But
absolutely.
And then they go finding different things to draw and to work on whatever the sort of the matter at hand happens to be. Is that also what's happening here on online? And can you kind of take us inside what a typical assignment might be and how it would be carried out in this online fashion?
So I really, I changed the structure format of my class. I think it's important right now to be aware that everybody's undergoing a certain degree of shared trauma and that we all have various limitations, whether we're taking care of somebody, maybe we lost a job, maybe we are an essential worker and we have to even more now than ever be out in the space doing that. So I tried to make the practice for my students be a little bit more concise. I made each drawing more of a single serving assignment that had some very specific, for all of my assignments, I always kind of outline it in a real clear language. This is the challenge. This is what we're going to do. We're going to learn, or we're going to go draw from space in the building or outside. You know, like you mentioned, I do a lot of perspective things when we're in kind of normal circumstances. So that would be the challenge. And then the objective here is to learn how to implement and use 1 and 2 point perspective in our, you know, as part of our drawing skills and drawing tools. I streamlined it so that most of the assignments now were a little bit shorter, so that students felt like they were getting something more immediately out of each time, so that there was a need to come back each time. So I did a few, I mean, I'll identify a few of the assignments that I think were particularly successful. I had them make a robot out of things that they found around the house. They had to put together just kind of found objects into the form of a kind of a body and a head and appendages. So we had these kind of cobbled together forms. It's something I could have done in class previously. It's based on Archimboldo's drawings of and paintings of kind of faces made from fruits and vegetables and flowers. Yeah. And so it was a really fun assignment. You got to see things that, you know, like they brought a sense of their space to the screen. These are the things that are around me. These are the things that I'm interested in. These are the things I'm using on a day-to-day basis. And then, you know, I showed them how to set it up using a video. I did some lighting. I talked about cast shadows. I talked about rendering in three-dimensional form. We played around with a thing from the Getty Museum, was trying to give kind of activate their archives. So the Getty Museum had put out a charge for folks to recreate things in their homes that looked like their masterworks that they had in their collection. So we did this as one of our assignments. Ultimately it was photography, but they were kind of drawing with objects in space, and then they had to kind of compose, you know. So there's you know, Van Gogh's still life with irises. There were lots of I'm trying to think, there were a few people that used a Manet still life of vases and oranges and fruits. So there were some basic things, but then there was a great one. Albrecht Dürer had a drawing of a stag beetle, and this student had brought together cord cables from their computer and a black shoe, and like they put it together, and it was brilliant. It was a perfect like interpretation, a modernization, a contemporization of this like hundreds year old drawing. And I think we might have even put that one up on our website. I'm not sure. We're trying to get those images out so people can see how active we are.
Wow. Love that idea. That's wonderful. Kimberly Green, I know another class you're teaching right now is 3D design. We don't have a lot of time, but I would love to hear you describe kind of what the essence of that course is and what it has been like to teach it in this online format.
3D design is basically an introduction. It's a foundations level course, an introduction to working in space, working with volume, working with structure. One of the biggest challenges with that class is that is a very studio-based class where we use a lot of equipment like the wood shop or plaster mixing or things like that. So one of the biggest challenges for that course was, similar to ceramics, where are students going to work and what materials are they going to use? And also just really thinking about, right, times are tough financially for everybody. So how do we do this in a way that's really inexpensive? So one tradition in art is to use like salvaged, throwaway materials and try to figure out, in some ways, turn nothing into something. One of the first assignments we actually did that was really great, and I think speaking to a couple of different things, like the trauma of everything that's happening, is we did Andy Goldsworthy projects. So for these projects, students, I guess following some of the recommendations of the CDC, one of the things that they're asking us to do, right, is to get outside and walk and get some sunshine and some vitamin D. So anyway, these projects were where students had to go out and find a site out in the world where they wanted to work, probably an empty place in a park, and then use the materials of that site to somehow impact the space. Hmm. And that was a really incredible assignment. Students did, like, I have a student in Houston that did an incredible thing in a pine forest, using, like, you know, part of the pine trees that had fallen down and everything. To add another student that really felt like she could not leave the house, and she did incredible work in her kitchen using spices. And then, like Ryan's class, then these are photographed and then turned in as photographs. Another thing that we did was I had them save all of their recycling and cardboard cereal boxes, and I had them design paper sculptures, very small paper sculptures. But what they did with these was then they traced out the patterns onto cereal boxes, and then they were all mailed out as postcards to everybody in the class. And so then what ends up happening is then you get the postcard with instructions, and then you assemble all of the sculpture. So it kind of solves a little bit of the problem. Now they have this physical thing in front of them, a sample of everything that everybody in the class has made. I really love both of those projects because it gets art out into the world. And so not only, you know, the people in the parks that might come upon their sculptures are going to get to see their art. And also I love the idea that, like, postal workers are going to be delivering these pieces of art and getting to see the art as well. So it's like, so anyway, and I feel like the postcard project also brought the class together again, that they're getting these, you know, these pieces of mail from everyone in their class with personal messages on them as well as art. Mm.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And I also like the stories that both of you have shared about how for students, they probably experience their own home in a little different way by, having to look around them for various assignments and whatever, and versus, I mean, and sometimes in certain cases, turning a room into their studio and making art in a place where maybe they'd never thought about that in quite the same way, and looking around for ordinary objects and ordinary things with which to engage artistically. All of this is absolutely wonderful to hear. I am glad that we had this conversation. I'm also glad that there are exciting things afoot in the department, including the addition of two minors within the art major. And I'm anxious to invite you back at some point in the near future to have a conversation about that. And in the meantime, I want to thank you for the conversation we've had today. Kimberly Green, Chair of the Art Department, Associate Professor of Art. Ryan Miller, Assistant Professor of Art and Director of the H.F. Johnson Art Gallery. And I really am thankful to both of you for these inspiring stories of how you are carrying on in the midst of the COVID-19 crisis. And wish you well, you and your students. And thank you again for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
And I'm really delighted that I can spend this portion of the morning show with Jojen Van Winkle, who is an assistant professor of art and program director for the Photography and Film and New Media program at Carthage. And we will spend the next few minutes talking with her about what this transition has been like for her and for her colleagues, shifting from kind of real life within the same room teaching to online teaching in these virtual platforms, and what it feels like to do that within the realm of the visual arts. Jojen Van Winkle, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg. It's a pleasure and honor to be on your program.
And since this is your first time on the program, I think it would be good for our listeners to just learn a little bit about where you come from originally and at what point your professional path took you to Carthage.
Sure. Before coming to Carthage, my background immediately was that I was a cinematographer and also associate producer for a land rights documentary. It's called The Land Beneath Our Feet. And that has traveled around the world to a variety of places, everywhere from Australia to Africa. And it's about land rights in Liberia. It's screened in England and Europe, all over the US. And so really wonderful project to be involved with. And before working in film and video, My work itself was very grounded in sort of a community-based focused and installation art. I was doing residencies around the U.S., working at children's museums, art centers, colleges, to build site-specific and site-responsive installations with recycled materials. So I didn't have to bring anything but my tools, and we could gather everything wherever we were at.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've also been an adjunct and a part-time instructor in a variety of places in Virginia as well as Wisconsin before having the opportunity to be part of the faculty at Carthage College. And I've been full-time with Carthage. This is coming to the close of my second year.
Very good. Did anything in particular serve as a catalyst for your interest in particular in filmmaking and cinematography? And do you trace that back to your childhood, for instance, or is that an interest that sort of took flight a little bit later?
No, the camera has always been something that's been close to my soul. So it's been a way, as people say, the lens through which I've looked at the world. When I was 16, I was able to live abroad for a year as an exchange student. And the camera was the way in which I could look and listen to the world around me. I was fluent in German, but when you go to a German school, by the time you're 16, they're already in their fourth year of chemistry, and I don't think I'd had chemistry yet. So there was a lot of opportunity for me to create art and start to craft my own voice, which I think has been grounded a lot more in documentary style type of work. And then at some point I got interested in sculpture. You know, life happens. And so many, many years later, I circled back around, and that's back to my passion and enjoyment of working with moving image as well as still images and audio.
I read in your biography that a lot of the research that you do and a lot of your professional work is circled around the concept of listening. Could you just say a quick word about the ways in which this is really central to a lot of the work that you do?
I think that at the heart of being able to understand the world around us and to really step into someone's shoes, to really have empathy, I think that involves stopping, pausing, listening to what's going on. And in the visual arts, listening can also involve observing, being that fly on the wall kind of. Also, I think listening can be active. Listening can be the way that you engage with questions when you're talking with someone about their life, just like you're doing. And listening can also be a way to hear yourself as an artist, as a global citizen, as an educator. Those are words for myself, as well as I think it's a way to honor in which all of us have paths that we have shaped, formed, stumbled upon. And with so much going on, always in life, I don't think it's just now. Maybe it feels accelerated because of technologies and easy communications. But with all that goes on and what makes up our lives, I think that the ability to do that is creates meaning, helps us understand our meaning in this vastness. And for myself, I also have a meditation practice. And so understanding what that is, how the breath helps us to feel the body, feel the moment, live in a space that's sort of undefined is something that interests me.
We're speaking with Jojen Van Winkle, who is on the art faculty at Carthage College, and she, like her colleagues, and like her colleagues in all of the disciplines, and not just at Carthage, but of course at colleges and universities across the country, has had to contend with this new reality of teaching within the realm of virtual learning, online learning. Jojen Van Winkle, is this something you have ever had to do before now, or did you, like many of us, have to kind of sort of figure this out from scratch, how to do what you do in this new way?
Yes and no. I before working at Carthage, I was teaching part-time at MATC in Milwaukee and was taking extensive Blackboard training on how to do online teaching. Mm-hmm. And then that was right before I became full-time with Carthage. So in a way, I had got some personal insight to working with the interfaces and some methods that could work with students for gathering digital assignments and turning things in digitally, plus working digitally. I was already doing that with some of my courses and in terms of having students create work that was digital, turn it in digitally. But when I say no, what I mean by that is that some of the courses that I'm teaching this semester are not digital. They're hands-on, they're about materiality. They're about not only being able to feel what you're doing, see and discuss that, it's also working with a lot of tools. Some of my classes need physical tools and physical spaces, safety gear, you know, all of these layers and layers of ways in which we need to manipulate just to say what we want to say through our art. So that has been probably one of the greatest challenges of how do we continue with the core for me? How do I continue with the core, the essence of the courses, or as we call them, student learning outcomes? How do I continue with that without all of the structure that's provided in the wood shop, in the having certain software available, and also just, you know, the students themselves having their materials with them? How does one go forward? And so that has been what I've been constantly week by week addressing.
Mm. I know that one of your courses is Intro to 3D Sculpture. And so can you give us some insight on some of what you have done to make this kind of a course that one imagines is ideally very tangible, how it can be done in this kind of intangible realm?
Yeah, Introduction to 3D Design is focused on sculptural working in the three dimensions and sculpturally. And what I did immediately when I found out we would be working remotely was start working on packets to send to the students. And our first project that we were going to work in anyway was working with Reed and focusing on line work. And so the students created in their remote studios at home these lovely pieces. They're built out of Reed, using hot glue guns, and also then covering parts of it or all of it with tissue paper. I put in the challenge that they could add lights so they could have it have the element of light, which is a component of sculpture, an extended component. And almost all of them did that, which was amazing to me. They found ways to bring light, whether it was a light bulb, a light structure, or string of lights. And a few of them made structures that would sort of hang in the window for natural light to come through. They just made beautiful forms. I'm happy to share a link with you if you would like that to show some of those images on the website, if the students approve, but they just went above and beyond. And the way I taught that one was I made I wanted to make something fun for myself because I was personally feeling bummed about this. And so I made a sort of time-lapse video of me creating part of a piece and then adding in wherever I would take photos of close-ups of what I was working on, and then I inserted that into the video and then added words and made it into a tutorial. So I tried to make it something fun for them to watch and also to be a tutorial. And I have to say what they made really blew me away. And why did it blow me away is because of the distance between us, because I couldn't be next to them in the studio and we couldn't talk about, well, what if you do this? What if you do that? What if you clamp a Reed piece here? And what if you adjust this? We had to do that all through conversation. Sometimes they would hold up what they were working on. But in our critique, the students submit photos and I have them take a variety of photos so we can see a variety of angles. And they just did a great job. And I must say that our art classes, we have quite a few majors and minors. We also serve as a fine arts requirement for our college. So in our class, in my class, I think I have three studio majors or minors, a couple theater students, and everybody else is taking it for FAR classes. They're like nursing or biology or environmental science. And so these are students that are outside of their normal comfort zone, possibly making powerful, meaningful work that they say they want to keep in their rooms around them. So what better could it be? Yeah.
We've already dwelt on the obvious and some of the not so obvious limitations of working within this realm. Have you found that there are any, in a sense, unanticipated silver linings to working in this virtual environment in terms of the students? Are there ways in which, at least for some of them, this is maybe a more comfortable rather than a less comfortable format in which to be doing their work and sharing it?
Yes. My digital photography class, in a way, this has been a blessing because they can reach content that they aren't able to gather when they're living on campus. And we want them to live on campus, but when they are able to be in settings where they have access to a more wider variety of imagery and also their own families at school, they can enlist their friends if they have time to be in their photographs, but to get their families. People in that color photography class, which is a digital photography class, this is our first semester running it. They're working with DSLRs. These students have made some amazing, amazing photos. We just finished a project where I was a little worried about. They had to get up and take a photo of the same composition, sunrise, noon, and sunset. And I was partly doing that to help them hopefully fight off any pending depressions that they have maybe and staying in bed too long, and also to see what happens with light. They rose to the occasion and they made just stellar compositions, photographs of the same scene in puddles, views outside their windows. I mean, it was spectacular. And others of them have been doing portraits of their spaces, of their families. And so they have access to objects that at school they have things, but it can be more limited, or we can see a lot of photographs of the lake or of sporting events, which we love to see that as well. I work with a student doing sports photography. But having access to the things, the richness of things that might be around them in their home settings or in their neighborhoods or those of them that hike has just offered a lot to their imagery and their content. And that's been powerful. The other thing that I've really noticed is that I have several independent studies this semester, and all of them have wanted to meet almost weekly, which during school, it's been like every other week. And I think that they've been craving that one-on-one connection with someone who knows them, who comes from their school setting, and they may be taking other courses where they don't have that one-on-one time as much because they're in the remote setting. We have concerns about bandwidth and can our students stay online a long time? And so there's not as much synchronous teaching possibly, obviously, than it would be if you were in person. So that has been really wonderful because I feel like I've been able to develop a little bit more of a personal rapport. Plus, when you're looking at someone and they're in their home setting, it just changes how you connect with them. A dog walks by, you see plants in the background, you see their bobblehead collection, you know, just all these things that tell you just a little bit more about who the individuals are that you have the opportunity to engage with in education.
Jojen Van Winkle is Assistant Professor of Art and Program Director for the Photography and Film and New Media Program at Carthage. And earlier in the hour, we spoke with Kimberly Green and Ryan Miller, two of her colleagues on the art faculty. My thanks to all of them for being part of today's morning show. I'm Gregory Berg. Tomorrow on the morning show, we hope to share a brief conversation with the mayor of Racine, Corey Mason, with an update on how the city of Racine and its residents are coping with COVID-19. Also tomorrow, Beth Dugan, who heads up the hospitality division here at Gateway Technical College. We all know how hard hit the hospitality division